I was told it was text 39 through 41, and we have 41 on the board, is that right? Yeah. So I'll read 39 and 40, and then we'll do 41. Text 39. Itihasa Puranani Panchamam Veda Ishwara Savebhya Eva Vaktrebhya Sasrije Sarvadarshanaha. He then created the fifth Veda, the Puranas and the histories, from all of his mouths, since he could see all the past, present, and future. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. There are histories of particular countries and nations and of the world, but the Puranas are the histories of the universe, not only in one millennium, but in many kalpas. Brahma has knowledge of these historical facts, and therefore all the Puranas are histories. As originally composed by Brahma, they are part of the Vedas and are called the fifth Veda. Text 40. Shodas yukto purvavaktrat purish yagnishtu tavata aptoryat aptoryamatiratrocha vajapeyam sagosavam. All the different varieties of fire sacrifices, shodashi, ukta, purishi, agnishtoma, aptoryama, atiratra, Vajapaya and Gosava became manifested from the eastern mouth of Brahma. And text 40. Vidya danam tapasatyam dhammasyeti padani cha ashramamscha yata sankhyam asrijat sahavritti bihi. Very good. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Education, charity, penance and truth are said to be the four legs of religion. And to learn this, there are four orders of life with different classifications of castes according to vocation. Brahma created all of these in systematic order. Please repeat. Education,
education,
charity,
charity,
penance,
and truth
are said to be the four legs of religion. And to learn this, there are four orders of life with different classifications of caste
according to vocation.
Brahma created all of these
in systematic order.
Purport. The nucleus of the four social orders, brahmacharya or student life, grihastha or household family life, vanaprastha or retired life for practicing penance, and sannyas or renounced life for preaching the truth, is the four legs of religion. The vocational divisions are the brahmanas or the intelligent class, the kshatriyas or administrative class, the Vaishyas or mercantile productive class, and the Shudras or general labourer class, who have no specific qualifications. All were systematically planned and created by Brahma for the regular promotion of self-realisation. Student life is meant for acquiring the best education. Household family life is meant for gratifying the senses, provided it is performed with a charitable disposition of mind. Retirement from household life is meant for penance and advancement in spiritual life. And renounced life is meant for preaching the absolute truth to the people in general. The combined actions of all members of society make the whole situation favorable for the upliftment of the mission of human life. The beginning of this social institution is based on education, meant for purifying the animal propensities of the human being. The highest purificatory process is knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the purest of the pure. Education, charity, penance, and truth are said to be the four legs of religion, and to learn this there are four orders of life with different classifications of castes according to vocation. Brahma created all of these in systematic order. So today is also the disappearance day of Sripad Ramanujacharya. And I was told to say something about that. I was also told to say something about Lord Nityananda. And I was also told to talk on the verse. I don't think that I can do all of that in one go. So I'm going to say a little bit about Ramanujacharya. Because there's a lot of things that could be said there about this particular verse. And maybe it can be done again tomorrow, because it's an important verse, because it describes the beginning of the Varnashram system and the creation of the four orders and four castes. So that's important, but I'm not going to say anything on that this morning. I will just mention that Prabhupada says in the previous purport there about the fifth Veda that the Puranas are all histories. Prabhupada is making a specific point there that the Puranas are not fairy tales. They're actual events that actually took place. And even though we can't verify them by archaeological evidence, which modern man is so obsessed with before they'll accept something as a historical effect, these histories actually took place, and you will never be able to trace them out, at least by archaeological excavations, digging down a few feet into the earth. These Puranas deal with the history of the universe, not just the one planet. And even if it was dealing with the one planet, it goes so far back in time that it even goes back into previous kalpas and days of Lord Brahma. So there's no question of being able to dig up a few bits of pottery and piece together an entire civilization on the basis of a few bones and stones. It doesn't work like that. One has to take the history from an authorized source, and that source is Lord Brahma. So when he spoke the Puranas, these are historical events that he actually witnessed, because of course he was the one that was there at the very beginning, and he'll be the one that's there at the very end, and he's seen everything in between. So we should just accept the Puranas as they are, even if they seem to be fantastic, because they are fantastic compared to our tiny point of view, but they are actual histories. These are actual events, and they should be taken as such, and not anything else. So in this verse it's mentioned about the four orders of life according to vocation. So that was one of the principles that Ramanujacharya also preached. He saw that when he appeared in 1017, so that's what, 1,000 years ago, that people were largely corrupted and dishonest. There was a lot of misapplication of the principle of Varnashram, you know, on the basis of birth. And so one of the things that he preached was the principle that a person is a Brahmana or a Kshatriya Vaishya Sudra by their guna and karma, and not by the janma. So even at that time that was a little controversial, but being the acharya, he was able to present that very clearly and forcefully and establish that as a principle of his preaching work. So Ramanujacharya then appeared in 1017. I got this from one of our devotees in New Zealand. He's been put out on the internet, Jai Tirtha Charan. He's given a few summaries of Ramanuja's life. Of course, he had a very long life. He left the planet in 1137, so he lived for 120 years. And some authorities say that he lived for 128 years, but anyway, it's still a long time, and there was a lot of events that took place in his life, so it's not possible to cover them in a very short period. So I'm just going to read a few little clips of some salient events. One in particular, and that is Ramanujacharya's connection with Mayapur, because he actually did come here, and that's recorded by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So we'll read about that in a second. But just a little bit of background about Ramanujacharya. He's said to be a partial incarnation of Lord Anantashesha. And he appeared on the Shasti on the sixth lunar mansion of the light fortnight in the month of Chaitra, which is April and May. So that's just coming up in 1017. He appeared in South India, Tundiridesh, at Sri Perambudur, about halfway between Kanchipuram and Chennai. His father's name was Asuri Keshava Somaji, who was also known as Sabakratu Dixitar, and he was believed to be either an Advaitin or a smarter Brahmin. So either he was a Mayavadi or a smarter. His mother was Kanti Mati, who was the granddaughter of the great Vaishnavacharya Yamunacharya. And of course, later on, Ramanuja was recognized by Yamunacharya as his successor, even though the two never actually physically met until after Yamunacharya had actually departed. Because there's a whole past on about how he tried to see him one time, and then somewhere or another, due to circumstances, it didn't happen. And then finally word was sent to him that Yamunacharya is just about to leave, you must come, he's calling for you. And then when he got there, he was already gone. But there was a significant event in that Yamunacharya's hand had three fingers folded like this. And then when Ramanuja appeared on the scene, he made three vows. And as he spoke each vow, one of them was to write a commentary on Vedanta Sutra, a Vaishnava commentary. As he said each vow, one finger would unfold until all the four fingers of Yamunacharya were open again, like that. So his mother then was the granddaughter of Yamunacharya, so there was even some family connection there as well. So Ramanuja was given the name Ilaya Perumal by his parents, and he was trained in the various studies of the Alwar saints of South India. His education was mostly given by his father, who was a pundit of the time. Then when he was 15, he was sent to Kanchipuram, where he and his cousin Govinda were sent to study under the monist Acharya Yadava Prakash. As the years went by and Ramanuja's maturity advanced, many times there were philosophical clashes between he and his guru, up to the point when Yadava Prakash became so disturbed by Ramanuja's preaching. He would make some statement, some Mayavadi statement, and Ramanuja would immediately correct him and tell him, no, that's not correct. And he would give a Vaishnav explanation of it. So Yadava Prakash began to think that Ramanuja, this man will be the destroyer of our whole line. He's going to destroy the whole monist philosophy. So he actually made a plan to kill him. And there were actually, during Ramanuja's lifetime, several attempts to murder him. But of course he was always protected. And later on, this Yadava Prakash actually realized the error of his ways, much later. And he actually came and surrendered to Ramanuja and became a disciple of his. So previously he'd been his guru, but then later on he recognized he knows more than me, and I should be his student. So, but still, it was quite controversial. You can see right from the very beginning what Ramanuja was preaching. He appeared to destroy the monist philosophy of Shankaracharya. And at that time, almost everybody was a Shankarite. They were all followers of Shankaracharya. And so what he was preaching was very, very controversial and very disturbing. There were a lot of people that stood to lose a lot if Ramanujacharya became prominent. And so, you know, he was attacked on several occasions, different ways. So, still unperturbed, he preached what became his so-called new philosophy, which is the Vaishnava philosophy of Vishishtadvaita, or qualified oneness. That means that he said, yes, everything's one, but at the same time he said that all the differentiations, all the different manifestations always exist, and they have a quality or a qualification of being connected to the Supreme Absolute Truth. So that's the qualified oneness, that he was able to identify the relationship of everything with the Supreme Absolute Truth and explain that they simultaneously exist. There's the Absolute Truth and there's all of his paraphernalia, etc. And they're always there eternally. So it's dualism. But what he called qualified oneness means there is a connection that he could explain. So he qualified what the connection was. So he was a successor to Jamunacharya, who was also a great Vaishnavacharya. He was a king originally. Later on he became a sannyasi. And he was married, I think when he was 18, Ramanuja. And then later on, because his wife wasn't very supportive of his preaching activities, he took sannyas at the age of 30. So that means he was a sannyasi for at least 90 years. And now, one interesting pastime for us is this description by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur about how Ramanuja met Lord Chaitanya. Because he appeared 1,000 years ago, Lord, so that's at least 500 years before Lord Chaitanya. But of course on the spiritual platform everything's always there. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives this statement. Sripad Ramanujaya Vishishta Dvaita Siddhanta Mahaprabhu Gaudiya Prema Mandire Bidhi Swarup. So this is found in the book by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur entitled Navadvip Dham Mahatmya, and it sheds the view of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas upon the mission and pastimes, and shows who came to help Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with his mission. So once, while Sripad Ramanujacharya was staying in Jagannath Puri, he offered prayers to Lord Jagannath, who became very pleased. Lord Jagannath appeared before Sripad Ramanuja and said, Ramanuja, you go and visit Sri Navadvip, for very soon I shall appear there in the house of Sri Jagannath Mishra. Sri Navadvip is my most beloved abode and is a part of the spiritual sky manifest in this world. As my eternal servant and a leader amongst my devotees, you should go there. Let your students stay here, for they are absorbed in Dasya Ras, or servitorship, and they will not understand the advanced devotional mood of spontaneous love of Godhead. So you travel there alone. Any living entity who does not go to see Sri Navadvip has been born uselessly. Just one portion of Sri Navadvip contains Rangachetra, Venkateshvara and Yadavachala. So these were the main areas in South India where Ramanuja was doing his preaching, but then he was told by Lord Jagannath, they're all in Navadvip, so don't be worried. Just go there, you'll be perfectly at home. Therefore, go to Sri Navadvip and see my form of Gauranga. After gaining my blessings there, go to Kurmastan and rejoin your disciples. One interesting thing about Ramanuja's going to Kurmastan, he was actually thrown there by Lord Jagannath. From Jagannath Puri. He didn't have to travel, he was just and then he was there. And at that time they thought that the deity in Kurmastan was actually Lord Shiva, but when Ramanuja went there he was able to establish that it was actually Lord Narayan. So folding his hands, Srimad Ramanuja humbly requested Lord Jagannath, my dear Lord, you have mercifully told me something about Gauranga, but exactly who he is I don't know. The Lord answered, it is known to you that Lord Sri Krishna, the Lord of Goloka, is the supreme absolute truth. That much is well known to my devotees. That same supreme personality of Godhead, who resides in Sri Vrindavan, is fully manifest as Gauranga, and his beloved abode, Sri Vrindavan, is manifest as holy Navadvipa. Navadvipa is the supreme spiritual abode, and it is transcendental to the influence of material nature. In that divine land, Lord Gauranga eternally resides. By my mercy, that holy abode has come to exist within this universe, but it remains completely unaffected by Maya. This is the verdict of the scriptures. If anyone thinks that Sri Navadvipa is only a material location, then whatever devotion he has developed will wither and perish. By my will, my inconceivable energy preserves this transcendental abode within this material world. Simply by studying the scriptures, one will not be able to understand the absolute truth. Only by my mercy can my devotees understand. Hearing these words of Lord Jagannath, Sripad Ramanujacharya was filled with love. "My dear Lord," he said, "your pastimes are truly astounding. The scriptures cannot fully describe your opulences. Why is Gauranga Leela not described in the scriptures?" Upon reflection, I find some hint of Gauranga Tattva in the Shrutis and the Puranas. Now, however, all my doubts are gone, and I am ready to execute your will. If it is your desire, I will go to Sri Navadvipa, and from there I will set out to preach about Lord Gauranga throughout the three worlds, giving evidence from the scriptures to all, converting them to the devotional service of Gauranga. Please instruct me. You have just to give me your order." Lord Jagannath replied, "Sripad Ramanuja, do not broadcast in this way. Keep these secrets of Lord Gauranga's pastimes as they are for the present. Only after he has concluded his pastimes will the people in general come to understand them. Preach about me on the level of Dasyaras, as you have always done, but within your heart, worship Gauranga constantly." Following Lord Jagannath's order, Sripad Ramanujacharya secretly cultivated his attraction for Sri Navadvipa. Being very merciful, Lord Narayan led him to Vaikunthapur and showed him his transcendental form, worshipped by manifestations of his different energies. Sripad Ramanujacharya felt himself most fortunate to see this, but as he watched, the Lord manifested his form as Gauranga, the son of Jagannath Mishra. Sripad Ramanujacharya's mind became stunned by the brilliance of his shining golden form. Lord Gauranga then placed his two lotus feet upon Ramanujacharya's head, and Ramanujacharya, filled with inspiration, began to offer prayers. Ramanuja said, "I must see your pastimes when you appear here in Navadvipa, my lord. I shall never leave this place." Lord Gauranga replied, "Your wish will be fulfilled, O son of Keshava. When my Navadvipa Leela is revealed, you will again take your birth here." Lord Gauranga then disappeared. Greatly satisfied by the Lord's promise, Sripad Ramanujacharya returned to Kurmastan, where he joined his disciples. During his life, he preached devotional service to the Lord in the mood of Dasyaras, or servitorship, throughout South India, while internally he was absorbed in meditating on the pastimes of Lord Gauranga. By Lord Gauranga's mercy, he was then born again in Sri Navadvipa as a devotee named Ananta to assist in the Lord's pastimes. When Lord Chaitanya made his appearance in Sri Navadvipa, Ananta Vipra was already quite old. He lived in a cottage which was situated beneath a huge banyan tree. There, within this humble abode, he would worship his deities of Lakshmi Narayan. None could describe the pure way in which he worshipped them. Ananta was a very dear friend and neighbor of Sri Vallabha Mishra. Sri Vallabha was very affectionate to him and treated him as his disciple. So on the most glorious day when Lord Gaurasundara accepted the hand of Srimati Lakshmi Priya at the Mishra's house, a huge festival was held and Ananta was invited. As the Vipra stood watching Lord Chaitanya and Srimati Lakshmi Priya sitting together during their marriage ceremony, dressed in gorgeous silks and jewels, he realized that they were none other than his beloved Sri Lakshmi Narayan. Unable to contain his spontaneous emotions, he began to dance like a madman. His hair stood on end and his whole body trembled. Understanding, however, that his activities might seem a little inappropriate, he finally controlled himself and returned to his house. Entering his cottage, he sat down before his Sri Lakshmi Narayan deities and again became overwhelmed with ecstatic love. He began to consider how his beloved lordships had now manifest as Lord Gauranga and Srimati Lakshmi Priya. He thought, "I am so fortunate to have personally seen him, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I who am so fallen and insignificant." As he sat there, Lord Gauranga, being very satisfied by his devotion, appeared before him. The Lord was a beautiful golden color and his bodily effulgence was brighter than millions of moons. He was dressed in first-class silks and decorated with valuable jewels. He sat on a fabulous golden throne, which was studded with gems, with Srimati Lakshmi Devi at his side. Lord Gauranga could understand what Ananta was thinking, and he manifested his four-armed Narayan form. Seeing his worshipable Lord Narayan standing before him, the Brahmana fell down at the Lord's feet to offer prayers. The Lord, being controlled by his devotee's love, smiled charmingly at him. "My beloved devotee," the Lord said, "by my will, you have seen this form. Anyone who sees my form has all of his desires fulfilled." Then after placing his lotus feet on Ananta's head, the Lord departed. Ananta became totally absorbed in remembrance of the Lord's Sri Navadvipa pastimes. So from this we can understand that these personalities are no ordinary conditioned souls or mere simple living entities, but they are the Lord's direct and trusted devotees. So that was Ramanujacharya's then appearance in Sri Navadvipa Dham. He was still worshipping Lakshmi Narayan, of course, and that's the way that he appreciated the Lord, but he could understand that Lord Chaitanya is also Lord Narayan. Okay, so then there's a few other little pastimes of Ramanujacharya. One time he was walking with five of his top sannyasi disciples. Stopping by a pond, he took some prasadam and he threw half of it in the water for the fish. Then he got up to walk on. Just then, the fish who had taken the prasadam assumed a four-armed form and rose up into the air to return back home, back to Godhead. Actually, several fish, not just one. The sannyasis stopped and began to disrobe. Ramanuja turned and asked them why they were not following him. They said, "We are thunderstruck. Please explain what we have just seen. Otherwise, how can we follow behind you in this condition?" Ramanuja replied, "Well, you have seen the power of taking Mahaprasadam." They answered, "But we're taking your Mahaprasadam daily, and this is not happening to us." Ramanuja said, "These creatures have no free will, and therefore they make no offense. So they get the full benefit at once. But you have your free will and human intelligence to make offenses, and thus you hinder your own progress." So there you go. Simple for the simple. And complicated for us. Another time Ramanuja was talking with his sannyasi's disciples and they asked him how they would ever be able to understand the deep philosophy that he had written. He said, "What I have written ultimately means one simple thing, prapati, or surrender." But they continued to argue that they would not be able to fully comprehend his writings. So he told the sannyasi disciple to bring one deaf and dumb tailor who was just walking by. When the man came, Ramanuja asked them all to leave him alone with this man. So they got up and left. But one disciple looked into the room from the window, from outside. Ramanuja stood up, and he motioned to the man to come and touch his feet. The tailor made a full dandabats and began to tremble and cry in ecstasy as he touched Ramanuja's lotus feet. When the disciples returned, they were amazed to see this man's ecstasy, symptomatic of the highest transcendental realization. They asked, "How could such a thing as this happen to him?" Ramanuja answered, "He touched my feet in full surrender. Although he cannot understand one word of philosophy, being dumb and deaf, he has attained all perfection." On another occasion, somebody asked Ramanuja who was more attached, the householder in Krishna consciousness or the sannyasis in the mat. This is a famous story, of course. So he set out to reveal the truth. That night, he entered with a few of his close associates in one of these renounced householder disciples' homes. He then began to clean them out of everything that they owned. Yeah, they went in there as thieves and they started stealing everything that they had. So they went even to the point that when they saw the wife lying asleep with her gold earrings and mangled sutram, they began to remove that from her body, sleeping body. The husband saw what Ramanuja was doing and he remained lying without saying anything. The wife also then stirred, and then in shock that somebody was there with her, she let out a scream, and then the thief was gone. So then the husband said to the wife, "Why did you disturb them?" "That was our Gurudev, and he certainly must have a higher plan. You should have rolled over and allowed him to take the other earring." Hearing the response filtering back over the next few days, Ramanuja then put into step his next part of the plan. "Now, you go to the mat where the sannyasis live, and in their ashram, you go there and take away their cloth and hide it." And so one disciple went to the ashram, and while the sannyasis were all at their Sri Bhasya class, he began to take away the parts of their kopins and tear strips from their dhotis, as if kopins had been made, and he generally swapped things around. When they returned, it was like all hell broke loose. "Where's my kopin? Who's torn off the end of my cloth to make a kopin? Where is my Angavastra? Has somebody stolen it to make underwear?" So I like this, they were arguing. So the point was, he was demonstrating practically who's more renounced, because the tendency was for the sannyasis to criticize the householders. They're all just attached. You know, they're living in, you know, association with each other. We're big sannyasis, we're so renounced. But what real renunciation is, then he demonstrated by that this disciple, he chastised his wife. "Why did you stir like that? Now you disturbed them. You should have turned over and let them take the other earring as well." So these men are all fighting over their kopins. So one of his sayings was that a Vaishnava should be like salt. In the middle salt, in the interim salt, and on the exterior salt. The same all the way through. Yeah, not showing one thing and then thinking another. But it should be the same all the way through, inside and out. So just before leaving his body, in 1137, at the age of 120, he gave 74 final instructions, all about serving the Vaishnavas. And a couple of examples of that. For instance, one should feed them nice preparations and make them so happy that they smile. One should massage their legs until they fall asleep. One should walk with them to the end of the village and then 9 steps beyond. And then faint due to intense separation at leaving their association. And then a summary of his main instructions were 2. Surrender to the Guru and serve the Vaishnavas. So that's a little bit about Ramanujacharya. course, he's also installed in the Gaudiya Math, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He installed Murtis as the four main acharyas, Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, etc., in his math there to show that Lord Chaitanya's philosophy and practice is the culmination of all the different sampradayas' philosophies. So that's there. And it's also said that when Ramanujacharya left, his body automatically preserved itself. Without any embalming or anything, his body is still said to be there. Anything, Sri Rangam, yeah? It's still there even after 1,000 years. It looks like a murti, but it's his actual form. It's his actual body. So, very exceptional personality. Anyway, Ramanujacharya was the main... He was the first one to really come out against the Shankarite philosophy and preach very extensively the Vaishnava philosophy to re-establish that. So coming in now, you'll see many references that Prabhupada makes to Ramanujacharya. Speaks very, very favorably about him as being the one that led that attack on the Mayavadi philosophy, and then Madhvacharya, of course, and others came afterwards, Vishnu Swami, etc., Nimbarka. So, we'll finish at that point. It's 9 o'clock. Does anybody have any questions or comments or would like to tell some more stories about Ramanujacharya? Yes, Prabhu.
Question. You know that we say in the life of Ramanujacharya and Madhvacharya for the last 750 years, hardly any of these sannyasis has fallen down. Was there any reason for them?
Is there any reason why the sannyasis in the line of Ramanuja or Madhvacharya in the last 750 years have not fallen down? That's your question, yeah? I don't know, you have to ask them. I will say this, that in the south they do a pretty good job of preserving their traditions, and they're quite strict about how they allow their sannyasis to behave. They protect them very carefully. More recently, actually, I was told that a leading sannyasi from one of their lines, he went to the west and he fell down. So it's tough business. If you live in a mud and you're sheltered, and this is what they generally do, they keep them very, very carefully because they know, the danger and how difficult it is to practice sannyas. So they tend to, keep in this sheltered condition, they preach to their own followers, etc. But, going out and coming in contact with the gross materialist, then there's a risk there. Yeah. So, of course, we've seen that in ISKCON. We're dealing with the most, difficult conditions on the planet, trying to spread a little Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada knew that, it was risky. He said that many times. I'm giving sannyas to these young men. There's a big risk there involved. But he said, if I don't take that risk, then how will we spread Krishna consciousness? So, sorry, he had his hand up first. And then, sorry, Swara.
I lived around with these people a while, and I know that they asked them an astrological chart for a sannyasi.
Yeah.
For them to award a sannyasi. Which is the one yoga where you have all the planets in one house, a four planets in one house, that's a sannyasi yoga now. That's one of the things they do.
Yes, they're very, very careful. They don't just let anybody take sannyas. They look at their astrological charts and they, figure out whether this person's actually going to be able to do it or not. Even then, still, you can't perfectly guarantee it. But they've had a pretty good success rate. Yeah? It's a science. And of course, in their lives, in the Sri Sampradaya, they're very much engaged in ritual also. So, performance of strict sadhana, daily ritual, these also help to keep the senses under control, you know, and keep your mind fixed. Sorry, Shwam Prabhu. Yes. The question was, when did Ramanuja emerge as the Manacharya of the Sri Vaishnavas? Because it was already existing, and he himself was initially initiated by an Advaitin. So how did he get to become the Acharya of the Sri Vaishnavas? I don't know the place or the dates, but at some point in his preaching, he had started writing, because he was always preaching Vaishnava philosophy. But then he actually, I think he went to a temple, somebody may know the details of this, he went to a temple of Saraswati. Saraswati, yes. And he had some exchange with the deity in which he pleased her. And from that time on, then he was established in the Sri Sampradaya as the main acharya. He got some blessing like that. So I don't know the details, I just read that very, very briefly. Do you know?
That was when he got the blessings from Srinivasa, he went to Kashmir, and the whole story behind the TV, and how he stole the scripture. But I think he was established a bit before that. I think after Yadav Prakash was defeated, and attempts on his wife were unsuccessful, he kind of emerged.
Right. Because he was recognized by Jamunacharya, and although he was not a close associate of Jamunacharya, Jamunacharya sent his close associates to take shelter of Ramanuja, because he already recognized who he was. So there was some link through that also. Main link was through that. Is that right? Janadivas.
Anyway, because you are inquisitive to understand, he said, you must be afraid of the greatest of all devotees. But then he says, if you really want to understand, you should go to Nandapuri and see my home there in the middle of Varanga. Only by worshipping Varanga will you ever understand Rama and Krishna. So he goes there and he sees Varanga, and he gets the blessings of Varanga. Then Varanga says, when I perform my pastimes, you will also be here with me as the love body of Nityananda. So, and the Bhakti Sandhya Sarsuri Thakur says in Chaitanya Bhagavad that he said, we recognize Ramanuja, actually he's Nityananda, as my Nityananda. He's a manifestation. So he's also our worshipful Lord. But it's like, we could get that message across to the South Indian, you know, the worship followers of Ramanuja, that your Ramanuja appeared here 500 years ago and told us how to worship Varanga rather than Krishna. And we could have a lot of big preaching field there, because we could have let them understand that he is one different than this. He appeared again as Nityananda and other things.
Okay, so good. Yes, because at the beginning there, we mentioned that he's an incarnation of Anantashesha. And Anantashesha, of course, is a manifestation of Shankarshan of Balaram, as is Lord Nityananda. So they're actually the same personality. Sorry?
Radha-Vishnu-Tattva.
Yes. Yes. He must be if he's an incarnation of Ananta Shasha. Thank you, Jagri Prabhu.
Can you reply to the first question?
I can actually tell the difference between you two now. Because Package Angry is actually filling out. Sorry. This is the result of taking Mahaprasada constantly. You know, you've done these two brothers, then you become just like them if you just take Mahaprasada. Sorry.
First question, how they don't get everything protected. The sannyasi said, nobody touches them, even the deer. They have in the mind that you see, even if he's only surrounded by sannyasis, and they don't even touch him. When I hand him something, just before they touch, they drop it, and you can use it, and you can let it go, and you catch it, and you should let it in like that. But he was speaking recently, and he was given a letter to these sannyasis. He said, all these sannyasis put together, not more at once, it's from sannyasi. He said, you couldn't do what they do. He said, you wouldn't last one day as an Iskon sannyasi. You know what they do, preaching up there.
Well, that's a real compliment, isn't it? Yeah, because preaching is so much more difficult. Just looking after yourself is one thing, but going out and actually extending yourself to others, that requires a lot of shakti, strength. Very difficult. Jai Masani Prabhu.
You were mentioning how the different aspects and varanas, there wasn't archaeological evidence. But I remember seeing a few years back that there was archaeological findings in the ocean of what now is Dwarka, the city of Dwarka. And then there was a satellite photograph that was circulated in Bengal, and I was there last year, of the bridge to Omaka. They could see evidence that it existed
around Satan.
The water.
Yeah. Well, it's also, it's not that archaeology verifies the scripture. But if some archaeological evidence turns up which matches the statements in the scripture, fine. That, you know, that gives validity to archaeology. It's not the other way around. Yeah. It's just like these rascals like Buddhadev Bhattacharya. You know, he had his little thing to say about the Ram Setu. And he was saying that, oh, this is, you know, there's no evidence that Ramachandra ever lived. You know, this is just some natural formation or whatever. And that, what's his name in Tamil Nadu? Karunanidhi or whatever his name is. The chief minister, he said the same thing. So, you know, the materialists, for them, oh, if we don't see something tangible with the senses, you know, an artifact or some man-made creation of something, then why should we believe this? That's all atheism. That's all. Archaeology, of course, has been used to promote evolution and atheism. But interestingly enough, Drudakama Prabhu, he's extending his activities now into the field of Vaishnav archaeology. And he's, you know, developing an interest in looking at old Vaishnav artifacts and things. You know, for the modern scientists, of course, to help to establish the validity of Vaishnavism. He has one disciple who's, I think she's just completed a PhD in archaeology, and she's supposed to be coming to India to work on some of the, you know, archaeological digs that they've got going, the survey of India, with the idea that we'll kind of infiltrate their activities. Yeah, and bring a more theistic kind of point of view into it.
and that purport that you're not supposed to speak after we're not taking time to speak on. Very nice definition of the purpose of education. I think it's saying that it's to purify the animal propensities.
Yes.
But I thought it was to get a good job.
Yeah. Education is that purifying the animal propensities of the human being. That's real education. All right, last one.
Not only the body, camphor and saffron.
Yeah.
You can see how many dead bodies make what grow. But you can see it's a contaminated way. You can really get your by very small growth.
All right. What's your name, Prabhu?
I'm from Sri Rangam.
He's from Sri Rangam. What's your name?
I'm Ram Mohan Das. Ram Mohan Das.
Ram Mohan Das. He's saying that the form of Ramanujacharya there, they preserve him with saffron and camphor. And one of his thumbnails broke off. So you're saying the nail is still growing? Alright.
Very nice. It's living. Not only dead body is nail or grown. Growing means it's alive.
Yeah. Yes. Well, you know, if he's Vishnu Tattva, then he must always be. I mean, that's his form. Alright, we'll finish there. Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Sri Pad Ramanujacharya Ki Jai.
In the shloka, was it like invocation? What's the meaning of
an invocation means?